I don't want to rustle any feathers here. I don't feel like content creation is going to be, you know, as big as it is right now. Anyone can call themselves a content creator.
Anyone can just walk off the street without any experience, just come in here and go, yeah, I'm a content creator. That I hate.
It's getting to the point now where it is scary. If someone gave them $1 million today, they wouldn't have a camera in their hand tomorrow.
The difference between art and content creation is, in my mind, like, huge. What is your viewpoint on the impact of social media?
Just the constant thought of needing to post all the time and what's trending, and it just set my mind into flames. Are people going to look at me when I say I'm setting up a production company? Are they going to look at me funny? Imposter syndrome then sunk in and I was like, am I ready for this? For me personally, it was just really bad for my mental health. God.
Cut that. Welcome to another episode of The Mood Podcast. I'm Matt Jacob. In this episode, I welcome back my friend Harry Pope. Harry is a very talented freelance filmmaker and videographer based here in Bali, who took a departure from photography last year and is now immersed full-time in the art of video and filmmaking. He works a lot with big brands around the world, and so it was incumbent upon us to talk a lot about his conflicts between passion, purpose, and commercial pressures. We also talked about his opinions on social media, content creators, and business techniques when pitching for jobs. It's always a pleasure to sit across from Harry, and glad we could do it again, this time in a more appropriate and formal setting. So now I bring you Harry Pope, part two. Harry Pope, welcome back to the Mood Podcast.
Yeah.
I say welcome back. You on here like a year ago, yeah. I think. It was kind of a shit podcast, not because of you.
Because of me. It was all my fault.
Mainly because of my wife and assistant who wasn't present, and therefore we had loads of technical issues. But so it's great to have you back. We've been meaning to do this for a while, and we're finally in the same place together for the same period of time.
Exactly.
And you're not traveling, and travel has been certainly something of a constant in your life for the last year. Tell me what's been going on, what the last year has kind of looked like for you.
Yeah, the last year has been busy, and, you know, very fortunate that it's been busy. We've been working hard, working with some cool companies, creating cool videos, working with cool people. But yeah, traveling a lot, traveling to Vietnam last June. I was in India late last year. Greenland, I did Greenland twice in a year. I didn't even think about that. I did, yeah, Greenland twice in 1 year. And Greenland is a pretty intense place to travel to, you know. We went in the winter and it was absolutely freezing, like -15, -20. And then we went in the summer, which was the season of mosquitoes. So then you're just like swarmed by mosquitoes. If you do want to,
really?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like crazy, crazy. Jed, we had these like netting things over our faces. Nets over our faces. And they weren't like hats with nets. They were just literally like a net, like you just put a bag over your head. And they obviously had little holes in them. And we were on a hike and they were going through the net onto our foreheads. I didn't get bitten as much. I was kind of, my partner was basically saying, oh, I keep getting bitten. And I was like, it's fine. Don't worry. Like, let's just get on with the hike. I wasn't getting bitten that much. That's why I was saying it's fine. She was like, no, it's really bothering me. And we finished the hike. She took off her net and I realized why she had been saying it's really bothering her, because her whole forehead was swollen. And we were just, you know, we were bitten alive. If you do want to travel to Greenland, it is an incredible place. I would never say, you know, don't go there, but there are things that make it a very like difficult place to travel to. And but the scenery and the wildlife, you know, they outweigh all the bad things that are there, all the things that are gonna, you know, all the cold and stuff like that. But yeah, I would still say travel there. But coming back to my point, travel has been a big thing over the last year, and I'm finding it nice now just to have some time off. I say time off of travel, not time off of work, but just, yeah, have some time to get back into a routine. The things I really miss, playing paddle with you and Fee and Jed, and going to the gym and going for coffees in the morning. Just the little things that you can't do when you're just on the road, busy, you know.
Where do you go for coffees?
I usually go to this place called Yore. It's not that nice, so I'm trying to find somewhere else. You need to build a little pop-up closer to home, mate.
I know. Yeah. Well, you say close to home, but for people who don't know Bali, it's like less than 10 minutes for us.
Yeah.
Because we live in, you know, just around the corner from each other. So actually, for us on a bike, it's like, oh God, 10 minutes is, I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
But for anyone else in a car, it's, you know, or in the Western world, it's not exactly a long way. Exactly. So it's funny perceptions. But how's life in Bali treating you in terms of work and personal? You know, for someone who's, you know, you're full video now, right? So you're doing some incredible, I love all your short films, incredible filmmaking stuff, which I see you wanting to get out there and do more of.
Yeah.
But maybe kind of that creative outlet is a little bit limited for you just because of client work, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's kind of the way the landscape is at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Like I always have to obviously go with the client job first. You know, the dream would obviously be to create what I want to create and do videos about certain topics I'm interested in. But you always have to fall under what the client wants. And sometimes you might have to shoot a hotel and make a hotel video. And, you know, I don't want to be a hotel filmmaker, you know, for the rest of my life. But it's, you know, need money on the table, really. So, so the last year has been mainly focusing on client work, I would say. And like I was just saying, in the hotel travel space. But in Bali, more so working for YouTubers and editing videos. George Hammond, I work with him every month, and he has a YouTube page now, YouTube channel. And we do weekly videos, so we're out recording pretty much every week for his YouTube channel. Again, I don't want to be a YouTube editor for the rest of my life, but he's a good friend and he wanted to do this for a long time. So I said I'd help him out with it. And it seems to be going well. So right now that's where I'm at. But then I know that I'm going to have to travel. I've got to travel in 3 weeks for a job. So but I'm looking forward to that one. I don't mind it when it's going to somewhere that I really like. So I'm going to Australia in 3 weeks and I know.
Good joke.
It's a cool place to be. So I'm very much looking forward to that. It's also with a company that I've been trying to work with for a long time. But I'm always thinking like, where's the next big place that I'm going to have to travel for work? And do I actually want to do it? Or am I quite happy just being here or
something about, I mean, what are you, 27 now? And, I guess still evolving as a person as much as a filmmaker. So, you know, it's interesting to hear, and we're good friends, haven't really had this conversation, or I haven't heard you talk about travel in that way before. And I always felt that you were, you know, travel came first, but was in conjunction with your job, and you always were kind of more than happy to do that. So it's interesting to hear, like, having a routine, certainly for an older guy like myself, having a routine is fucking everything. You know, it's almost the core of happiness, right?
Yeah.
It's like having routine, having home life, building a nice home for you where you just feel comfortable and happy. That being said, like I do understand still the desire for people and creators to really just want to travel all the time. Just don't know how they do it.
No.
Like even when I was your age, I was kind of wanting to settle down, but you know, everyone's different. What does that look like moving forward then? Because nearly all of your jobs, you have to travel because you don't have any jobs in Bali, or you can't do any jobs in Bali, right? So, you know, is that something you going to have to change in the future in terms of living situation?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I just like from the last, I would say over the last 6 months, I've really analyzed the kind of people that live in Bali, what they do, what they're working on. And I think that I came to like a consensus that it isn't the place I can be long term for what I want to achieve. I want to work in bigger productions. Obviously I'm dreaming really big here, but you know, TV, film, those are the things I'm really, really interested in. And I just can't see myself working from Bali in that type of scenario. So I feel like eventually I'm going to have to say, you know, what's better for my business? Is it living out here and being with my friends and, you know, enjoying my life? Or am I going to be able to do that in other places as well as, you know, finding work? These are like the constant thoughts that are bouncing back and forth in my head. But right now, like me and my partner had a conversation about it because she was thinking maybe we should move back to Europe soon. And to be honest, like all of my friends are here. I still have friends at home, but you know, we don't speak that often. I would say my really close friends are all out here, and I couldn't imagine being in the rest of my 20s / like coming into my early 30s at some point, not having them around me and not being able to just to text one of them and say, can we go for a coffee here? And can we go and play paddle here and such? So I can't see it happening just yet, but I do feel like there is a time when I'm going to have to just, you know, say enough's enough. And I don't feel like I feel like there's going to be a brick wall and I'm going to hit it at some point out here. And, you know, whether that comes in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, I really don't know. We've got our villa for another year in Bali. We're probably going to then move and find another place. And I've got roommates who I love very much, but you know, my girlfriend's going to be turning 30. She said she doesn't want a roommates going into her 30s.
Oh, you put that on her?
No.
Jed got thrown under the bus.
I love my roomies, and we've had a great year, and we're going to have a great year ahead. But you know, there is time where we just want some space to ourselves. So yeah, I think after that time, we'll find our own place. And then, yeah, I think I need to really think about what I want to achieve. I'm always thinking ahead, always thinking a year ahead. Maybe I should be thinking a year ahead in terms of other things other than work. This is something that Jed tells me a lot. Like, I need to actually think about my life rather than just work, work, work. But I always think about work first and what's around the corner. And yeah, maybe I just don't see it being long-term out here. I just see a lot of content creators out here, which I don't think I am a content creator. You know, going back to posting on Instagram that we were speaking about earlier, like I don't really post on Instagram anymore. Most of my work is creating for a company, creating videos, assets for a business to be able to use for marketing and for their social media. So yeah, I don't see myself in that niche. And I feel like Bali is just growing and growing with content creators. And if you are a content creator, get yourself to Bali. You know, it is the perfect place for it. Actually, don't get yourself to Bali.
That.
I mean, it's an amazing place for content creators. You've got literally everything you need. You've got beaches.
Enough people here.
There is enough people here. So if you've booked a flight, cancel it right now. But you, over the last 2 years, I've met so many people in the industry. Everyone comes here. Everyone gets along. Everyone shares new ideas. I've literally met some amazing lifelong friends out here. So I can't slay it too much, but I know there's going to be a point in time where I'm like, I need to make my way to somewhere that's going to be able to get me to my next step.
Do you find yourself almost creatively stuck in a corner because Bali is, you know, I know a lot of, I don't know how to label what you do, I guess, cinematic filmmaking. You know, if you were to go and do whatever you wanted to do, it'd be something like that, right? Go make
for sure
some beautifully cinematic films about whatever you want to make. I feel like there are the filmmakers that either live here or come here, they do something that's cultural because, you know, Bali's obviously rich in culture. Whereas that doesn't seem to be, I know you do have interest in many other cultures and shooting many other cultures around the world. But Bali doesn't seem to be that for you, which is obviously there's nothing wrong with that. So therefore, do you feel like, well, if I'm not going to do that in Bali, and then there's not kind of the genres that I want to kind of dig into in terms of car makers or something you really, I know you want to, you know, work with more vehicle manufacturers, bikes and cars and do some kind of epic shooting with them.
Yeah.
If that's not here and then you're not going to, you don't really want to shoot what Bali has to offer, then you kind of stuck, right? You either have to get those jobs and therefore now travel. You're in the travel fucking shit.
Yeah.
Or you don't, right? And you find something else. Is that, you kind of feel trapped in that respect?
Yeah, definitely. I think that I am in that kind of scenario where I will just travel for work, like you just said. Like, I'm just going to have to suck it up and travel and, you know, go and search for the jobs that I really want to do. But yeah, I've been shooting in Bali. I first came to Bali 5 years ago and, you know, loved the culture, started shooting a lot of photography back then, shooting the people and, you know, the amazing landscapes that we've got out here. And then started to venture into other countries and shoot their cultures. But yeah, I've just been doing it for such a long time. And I just felt there was like I just didn't feel like there was a place that I could go and do this kind of work. And I really don't know like what made me not want to do it anymore, but I just felt like I'd done culture and I just wanted to move on to something else. And I know that there's a lot of other cultural photographers out there like yourself who are just, you know, absolutely killing it with your craft. But for me, I didn't feel my niche was there.
Where is it? What's your, you know, you had a blank canvas and you pick up your camera. What are you shooting?
Man, I still think I'm finding my feet with that. You know, I don't think there's like a, I love trying new things. Like in every film that I do now, I try at least one new camera technique.
Give me an example.
So for India, our India job, we did a film for Etihad, the airline. And this was a couple of months ago when, I don't know if you have noticed a lot of clamp shots. This is like a very big thing at the moment. Yeah. For filmmakers. So it's like attaching an object through a clamp in front of your camera, having the camera stationary on the other side, and then the object would stay in the middle of the frame. Yeah. So this was quite a big thing for filmmakers. I'm sure a lot of you, if you are filmmakers listening, will know exactly what I'm talking about. So we tried some cool camera techniques with that. We had like Jord holding the boarding pass, and my camera was focused on the boarding pass, and he was kind of like swinging it as if he was walking through the airport, but you got the focus lock on like Etihad as the brand on the boarding pass. Same with like a phone. The phone was fixed in the middle and he was typing in like the location that he wanted to go on the Etihad app. And these are like little camera techniques that we used for that video.
Where do you learn these techniques?
Through shooting with the guys out here, I guess. Yeah. I've been shooting with Mike Visuals, who's yet to come on your podcast. I'll have to drag him on.
Come on, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not going to chase you anymore.
Get your ass on, mate. Get your ass on. Yeah, so he uses that technique a lot. He's actually got like a product that he bought out with Small Rig, like specifically for that, which funnily enough, and he knows this, so he needs to cut me in 5%. We both were shooting with like this homemade rig that he had. And he was like, wouldn't it be cool if we could just have a product that was exactly this, but you know, not all these pieces that I've mashed together from all the bits and bobs that I have at home. And that's how like his idea for the product came together, and then he pitched it to Small Rig and they loved it. Nice. So yeah, that shooting with other creators and watching other creators' videos on YouTube has definitely inspired me trying new things. The recent Hong Kong video that I haven't actually released yet, I used a match cut, which is like finding a shape, like a circle, and you find loads of different circles and you put them all one after the other very fast. So okay, they kind of match in sequence. Yeah, just little things like that I've never tried before. And I don't know if I'll use it ever again, but I'm quite open to using new camera techniques and just elevating myself as a filmmaker.
Yeah, I think it's nice for someone to sit across from me and say, look, I don't know myself well, or I haven't kind of cemented my craft with any specific style or genre or, you know, any kind of targeted job that I want to really go for, other than, you know, you have an idea of who you want to work with.
But yeah,
generally speaking, like, you know, what am I going to make? Well, I'm just going to, you know, I'm still kind of figuring that out. And I think that's really a great place to be. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If anything, the opposite. So you still have an open mind with everything and accepting everything that comes your way and being able to just, like you said, elevate and evolve with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you mentioned, I thought, because I was gonna, when I asked you the question where you learn these skills, like most people say, well, YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, YouTube. I know you love watching YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
How and we'll get onto YouTube in a minute, but and you touched on Instagram earlier. How does kind of social media affect your world now compared to when we last spoke? Because, you know, I know you're the sort of guy, and nearly all of us are, you know, we look at other people, we look across our shoulder, we look across the fence. Yeah, that his grass is greener than mine. Or that's where, you know, more innocuously, that's where I want to get to. And that's my goal. And you're kind of always looking ahead rather than looking in the present, which is great when you're goal setting, right?
Yeah.
And you're kind of trying to evolve, which is where you are. How does Instagram, social media and phones kind of play into that? Have you kind of been able to push that aside?
Yeah, I mean, like I touched on it earlier, but just being able to find that posting on social media was really bad for my mental health and always thinking about what I had to post next. But also like people watching and just like thinking about other people over my own goals. And I got into a bit of a habit of like always watching what the other person was doing and what jobs they're getting. And instead, I just needed to, you know, have a bit of tunnel vision and, you know, focus on my own thing. And funnily enough, I was in the gym with George the other day, and I was speaking about another creator and what job he had and what he was getting. And he kind of looked at me and just kind of did the blinders, like the horse blinders, over my eyes, like literally like that, and just didn't say a word to me and just did that. And I was like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I know I just need to ignore the noise, the background noise, and just focus on my own path as well.
Why? What made him do that? What were you looking at, or what were you?
I can't remember what in particular it was. It was like another, you know, few filmmakers here and there who were doing this kind of work and getting jobs, like, you know, working for car companies, working for this and that. And it just, I was talking about it too much, to the point where he was probably like, Harry, stop. Like, you tell me about what you want to do. Don't tell me about what they're doing.
Tell me about what you've done
as
well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so yeah, it did make me think straight away. He didn't even need to say anything after. And I was like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I know what my path is. I know what I need to do. I just need to work out how I get there. And if it's a bit slower than the next person, then so be it, you know.
Still your story.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own story.
Exactly.
How do you, I mean, that's so much easier said than done. Mm. Like, put your blinkers on, focus on your own goals, your own path. You know, we all try and do that, essentially. I mean, it's still good to kind of be aware of the environment and, you know, what's working for other people that may work for you if you were to apply it. Just like techniques, right? Oh, that technique might work, so I'm going to apply. But generally speaking, I couldn't agree with him more, right? It's like, it's just in practice, it's extremely difficult, especially when you've got, you know, take phone. If you took phones out of our lives, it'd be much easier, right?
What a life, man.
But it also provides, like, you know, a great sense of inspiration to some people. Yeah. But for you specifically, you know, how does Insta, because I know Instagram used to be a big part of your life, maybe not so much anymore.
No, yeah, just I just found that all of the work I was doing was never related to my Instagram. I would do very small jobs that would be like a social media post or something for a job. And I got my following to, you know, like enough where it doesn't matter if I needed more or less to get the kind of jobs that I was doing.
Right.
So it was fine. Like I was happy in that place. But just the constant thought of needing to post all the time and what's trending, and it just set my mind into flames. And I just couldn't stand the thought of, like, the next day I needed to figure out what I needed to post that night to try and get engagement and to try and get people to, you know, comment on my work. And I know it's so good to put your work out there to get new, fresh eyes on it. But it, for me personally, it was just really bad for my mental health. And I think that a lot of people would probably relate to me and maybe think that they're in a bad mental state because of social media. And all I can say is just, like, take a break. It doesn't matter. You know, nothing's going to happen if you take a break.
Well, again,
unless you lose your business and then you go back to your home country and then have to work as a supermarket. then don't listen to my advice.
There's nothing wrong with you working as a supermarket. Yeah. We've all done it.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, I think this kind of brings what you said, brings it to this fallacy and almost delusion that, especially in the art community, and even more so with the niche of photographers and videographers, they think you can't be successful in air quotes, or successful in what they do or in business without a meaningful social media presence, which is absolute bullshit, right? That is such an untruth but people don't know about that. And I put myself in a 22-year-old's position who's, you know, maybe doing photography for a year, getting to a point where, okay, I can kind of do this. Maybe I can start pitching for jobs. I got 1,000 followers on Instagram. How am I ever going to do this?
Yeah.
And then I end up putting 99% of my time and effort into creating for Instagram. Exactly. And then you are in this coffin corner where you can't get out of it because people know you for what you've put on Instagram rather than know you for who you are, or, you know, a greater body of work. So it's, you know, it's great to hear you say that. And obviously I know that as well. I've been through it. And I don't know what the future of this space looks like, because those people who have found success without social media, don't really have the platforms to shout about it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
That's why it's nice to have some people like that on the podcast because they now have a voice.
Yeah.
Because all of our exposure is dominated by social media, you only ever see the people being successful on social media. Yeah. So, you know, it's a really difficult situation.
Yeah.
I don't know how creators, whatever you want to label them as, get past that.
I hate the word creators, but I use it all the time because I never know what to call people. It's like, what are they?
Artists.
Yeah, artists, exactly.
But what's the difference between we'll come back to the question I asked you in a minute, but what's the difference between a content creator and a influencer, an artist and a photographer and a filmmaker and all of these labels? You know, you could be all of that together, right?
You could wear
various different hats, but I hate the term content creator as well.
Same.
Why?
I think that it's just whatever the person wants to label themselves as, and they all have different meanings, but whether that person calls themselves a content creator or a filmmaker doesn't make a difference. Like they're still probably doing the exact same work. But I think that's a really hard question to answer. I'd say like an influencer is pretty obvious. You know, they are people who don't have the best skills in the craft. They're not like overly fussed about the deep parts of filmmaking, but they will create content to, you know, help their audience with certain things and I don't know, promote certain products, et cetera, et cetera. They're there to influence, I guess. And a content creator, the only way I see it is someone who focuses on short form films and short form videos. And I never see a content creator who I see posting longer form films, documentaries, and them saying that they're a content creator. You know, I always feel like content creation is short form. And I feel like filmmaking is long form and cinematography and videography is a lot more longer form video. And then photographer is, you know, self-explanatory. But
so what would you say a YouTube channel owner is with who makes 20-minute videos?
I'd say it's depending on what the video is. If it's like a
true
cinematic, it's a filmmaker. If it's educational, I would say you're more so, that side of your business is more so of a YouTuber. But then you can be a photographer who's a YouTuber as well, who has a YouTube account. There's so many different labels, and whether it matters or not, I don't think it does. You know,
I don't think it does. But I think that all of these labels are labels that you can give yourself without any predisposition to anything else pre requirements or qualifications. Like anyone can just walk off the street without any experience, just come in here and go, yeah, I'm a content creator.
Yeah, exactly.
That I hate.
Yeah.
Because it's homogenized. Yeah, now it's democratized to, and there's nothing wrong with that to a limit. It's like, you can just, but you can be whatever you want to be. Well, no, you can't. You can't go and be a doctor unless you've got, you know, a good brain, loads of qualifications, loads of education, and years of experience.
Yeah.
So you can put your mind to it and eventually one day you get there.
Yeah.
So, but that's where content creation is frustrating for me because, and even as a photographer, right? Self-taught photographer.
Yeah.
What makes me say I'm a photographer, and this is a completely separate conversation altogether, one that I want to address at some point. People who say they're photographers and you look at their work, go, you're not a photographer.
No.
You're not. Yeah. You're an influencer or you're a content creator or you're just not good enough to say you're a photographer. Yeah, but I take photos. Well, then everyone's a photographer.
Yeah.
And then we've got a different kind of way of talking about it, right? But
it's a very fine line. There's just like, I don't think there's like one surefire answer for that. But I feel like I don't want to rustle any feathers here. But I just don't feel like, in my personal opinion, I don't feel like content creation is going to be, you know, as big as it is right now. I feel like there's only going to be a matter of time before, you know, content creators right now feel like that they've got to a point where, okay, they're getting older now, and then they have to go, am I still going to be making the same content as what I'm doing? Or how am I going to evolve this new content? You know, they might be shooting stuff in Bali, you know, going to cool places in Bali and shooting travel content. But how long does that last? But by the time you've done it for 10 years, does that not get to a point where you're like, how can I elevate this? What's my next steps? I just don't feel like content creation has like a a path all the way to the top. I feel like it gets to a level and it's just like, where do you go with it after that? Yeah, you can, I don't know, start your own agency or that's the only thing. I don't know. I can't see the top sort of success points of it. And that doesn't mean that, you know, success is so, it's so different to every single person. But, you know, I just couldn't see myself doing content creation for the next 10, 15, 20 years. I feel like there's going to be a point in time for a lot of other people as well, where they're like, okay, what's next? And then they just don't know which path to go down because they've been doing content creation for so long. A lot of the people that I have spoken to in the content creator industry aren't even that bigger fans of photography and videography. You know, that's their job and that's what they do. And content creation, they've kind of fallen into it. But if someone gave them $1 million today, they wouldn't have a camera in their hand tomorrow. Whereas that's the complete opposite of me right now. Like if someone gave me $1 million today, for sure I've got a camera in my hand tomorrow. That's the only thing.
Which camera would you have?
Sony.
Even if you had $1 million?
No. Sony right now until I sell it. Put it on until eBay that
Sony
night.
Ambassador.
Yeah. I'm only saying that just in case there's any Sony ambassadors watching.
It's actually a really good way of putting it, actually. Yeah. I haven't thought about it like that. If you've got a content creator on one hand and a photographer, filmmaker on the other, like truly passionate photographer, filmmaker on the other, and each are given $1 million, the content creator would likely give up making content.
I would think that most of them would.
Most of them would.
I don't want to label. Yeah.
Whereas you would probably upgrade your camera and that's about it.
Yeah.
And
pretty
just get
much,
a few
yeah.
more lenses and still, because it's...
Probably get a nice house somewhere in the Bahamas and go on a holiday.
Because it's vocational. It's like you love it and that's what you would do.
Yeah.
Even if you had no money or loads of money.
Yeah.
And the other thing I think, and you know, maybe we're not addressing this the right way because maybe this is the wrong conversation to even have. Maybe it's not about does content creation matter? Do what we call content creators matter? Are they important for society? Are they helping us, hindering us? I think what really matters in terms of distinguishing what they are, what this, you know, umbrella of kind of craftsmen are, is the intention behind it in terms of, okay, if I'm a content creator and I just enjoy making content, you know, I don't want to kind of pigeonhole loads of people here, but if I'm a stay-at-home mum and I just want to do tips on how to bring up kids,
because
I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And if I blow up, I blow up. If I don't, I don't. But I just enjoy making content and I'm a content creator.
Yeah.
Cool. But if I'm a content creator and I'm giving tips on this and I'm calling myself an artist and I'm kind of, you know, playing above my pay grade then I just don't think it's like anything. If you have the right intent or you are honest with that intention, I think then we can all get along and respect that.
Yeah.
But the difference between art and content creation is in my mind, like, huge.
Yeah.
And that's my problem with it, is when people go, I'm a content creator, like as if it's something that's cool and trendy and you should be really proud of. If you're getting to like 1 million subscribers on YouTube, like, fucking,
you're a content creator.
You're a content creator and a really good one.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, good for you. Yeah, like Peter McKinnon's of this world. Like,
yeah.
I'm taking absolutely nothing away from that, because you're taking a skill, you're learning how to put that skill into something that's of effective output.
Yeah.
And you're doing it.
Yeah.
Like, good for you. Yeah.
And a lot of the people that I learn things from and watch online are all content creators.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to badmouth them, because I don't think that it's a bad thing to do. I just can't see the longevity in it. I just can't see where the next steps you could take. And hopefully there's a lot of people out there that have figured that out and they've got a game plan and they know what they want to do.
But it's where content creators and we'll talk about the impact of society in a minute, but there's where content creators and influencers think they're better than they are at whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking pipe down a minute. Like, you've got a following because people like who you are. Like, you didn't create who you were.
You were
born who you were. Like, well done. You've spun that in a way that people enjoy watching, listening. Like, that's amazing. Like, that's talent. Great. But that's it.
Yeah.
Like, let's not get carried away here. It's not art.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that is not art.
Yeah.
Art is something that's evergreen that will last. There's timeless, right? Whatever, whether it's successful art, not successful art, it's there. It's there as a piece of art, whether it's a film, short film, documentary, photo, series of images, even NFTs, all this kind of stuff.
Anything with meaning, I think.
Anything with meaning, yeah. Purpose, and intention, yeah. To be art,
yeah.
Right? That, for me, is where they are vastly different. And if you fast forward 100 years, like, would I want to go back and watch a video that someone's put on YouTube about their day? No.
No.
No, that and that's the difference. Yeah. It's just the same analogy the $1 million.
Yeah.
That for me makes such a big difference. Hi, everyone. Before I let you continue with the podcast, just indulge me for a few minutes. I want to briefly talk to you about my new brand, Yore. Founded with my business partner and photographic artist, Finn Mattson, we are proud to bring you a new artisanal jewelry and specialty coffee brand. Yep, what on earth do they have to do with anything? Well, they're both our passions, and they've always been another artistic outlet for me now for over a decade. For those that know me, coffee and jewelry have been my other obsession since I was young, and I am a qualified SEA coffee specialist. So when I met Finn, some of you might have listened to my podcast with him when we barely knew each other, our love for art and jewelry had a home, and that home is Yore. Yore is about the art of intent for everything that we do. Our intention with the label was to add a touch of celestial elegance and artistic expression to our visual narratives. Every piece is a statement, a reflection of your unique story and purpose. It's not just jewelry, it's a wearable piece of art that speaks volumes. Picture this, silver or gold adorned with an actual piece of lunar meteorite, making every piece as unique as the moments we usually capture through our lenses. From limited edition lunar jewelry pieces to finely crafted 925 sterling silver and gold rings, pendants, and chains, there's something for all of you in each of our unique designs. We're also committed to the environment as much as possible. Our coffee in our Bali showroom is direct trade, organically produced and locally farmed, minimizing impact on the environment as much as possible. Our packaging is all sustainable and our jewelry recycled, other than the moon rock, of course. Proudly eco-friendly in both packaging and jewelry production, you can feel good about looking good. And to top it off, we offer worldwide shipping, ensuring that a piece of lunar beauty can grace your collection no matter where life takes you. And if you ever find yourself in Bali, please come and visit our House of Yore. Our cafe and community-driven art house is a haven for creatives just like you. And before we head back into the podcast, please just take a moment to explore Yore's collection. As a special treat for you, my wonderful audience, Yore is offering an exclusive discount. So head over to our website and use the code in the description for a 10% discount off your jewelry purchase. The link and details are all in the description. So thanks so much for listening, and I'll let you get back to the podcast now. So what is, you know, now we've kind of got the individual side of content creation sorted. We've solved it.
Yeah.
What is your viewpoint on, I guess, the impact of social media, not just on the photography world, but generally on people? Because I know, you know, we all have differing experiences with the usage of our phones, especially Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, it's been linked to many mental health diseases.
Yeah.
And the phones have, let alone Instagram and social media platforms, and they've got a lot to answer for, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But they can also be seen as great tools for certainly photographers, videographers, filmmakers inspiration, reaching a new audience, sharing ideas, getting money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, how does that affect your opinion on, you know, certainly since you've stopped kind of using it as much? Mm-hmm. Where do you think kind of society goes, and is it really a bad thing that we still have the Instagrams in our lives?
I mean, so I was speaking to a friend about this recently, and his view was that content creation is going to be the, you know, the biggest thing in the world, you know, give it 5-10 years, and it's going to surpass a lot of jobs, and the money that's going to be involved in it is going to be crazy. Me personally, I just can't. I feel like there is going to be a wall that people hit. But then I think about the new generation coming into it. I guess it's the type of content that is out online, and like you said, outside of photography and things like that. Like the photography filmmaking side of social media is 1%, There's so much involved in social media, and I think it's probably one of the most toxic places that you can ever spend your life, is scrolling through Instagram that isn't, you know, isn't related to your craft or isn't you trying to learn something. It's you watching TikTok dances and crap like that. You know, I can't fathom it. I just can't. It doesn't make sense in my mind. I look at these, sometimes one will come up if I'm on Instagram and I'm like, how do you, I'm sorry if anyone's listening and they do this, but how do you set up a camera and dance in front of it or do that kind of, I know I've gone into a bit of a separate path there, but yeah, I just can't see it.
I think that's the audience's fault as much as the platform.
Oh yeah,
I don't think it's anything to do with the person who's dancing, right?
Yeah,
because we're just fueling that. Yeah. Like, I'll go one step further. Yeah. Why do people enjoy watching that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
they probably ask, why do you enjoy watching, you know, short film?
Yeah, it's true.
Or whatever.
Yeah, I love watching like gear videos, just talk. Yeah. And you know, I like watching when
not
cocaine videos. I like watching camera gear. Let me say the word camera first. I love watching when people like build a camera rig. It sounds so weird. I don't know why.
Sounds
like
a bit nerdy.
Yeah, I love.
We are nerds.
Yeah, yeah. I love that side of filmmaking. I think that's why I wanted to go down the production route as such, because I just love all the different pieces that make a bigger picture. I guess I should touch on the fact that, you know, I used to do a lot of photography, and photography is where I first started getting into the industry, and I slowly delved away from it because I again hit a brick wall. I hit brick walls quite often, apparently. I just seem to like hit a brick wall and have to go in a different direction. There's so many fantastic photographers out there, and I just felt like I couldn't find a presence in the photography industry. I couldn't find my own style, my own path. I was getting heavily influenced by people around me, but it never felt like it was me. It always felt like I was copying someone. I struggled to come up with new photographic ideas, and then that's when my sort of eye led to video and film, and I just loved all the elements that came together. It allowed me to be way more creative. And yeah, I guess like for you, when you go out and you know, photograph a local person, you're never going to get that same experience. No one's ever going to be able to copy that same experience. You know, that person is going to be gone. You're probably never going to see that person again. No one's going to be able to find that particular person that you photographed, go back to them with the same lights that you had, in the same conditions that you had, and take that photo. But I was doing a lot of landscape photography, and that kind of, yeah, in that sort of field where someone could just come behind me and take the same photo as me. And I felt like I was literally just one step behind the person in front who was doing the exact same thing. And with film, I feel like no one could ever recreate what I did, you know?
When we say film, not film photography, but
sorry,
movies.
Yeah, I know. So like filmmaking.
Filmmaking.
Yeah, no one could ever recreate what I was doing. You know, there's no way someone can get the exact same shot and put it together in this exact same style. And that's why I really felt like that was my path and that's where I wanted to go. Yeah.
Nice. On that note of photography, I went to China last year.
Mm.
And you know, as you know, China and landscape photography is like masses, right? The droves come in and beautiful, obviously, but the beauty attracts just fucking shitloads of people.
Yeah.
And you know, I wasn't there for landscape, but I went to some beautiful places and I won't give away the location because I don't need any more people, but I went to this one spot which just looked over these beautiful mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned up at sunrise. I took my camera, obviously. Like, I don't do landscape photography. I'm not very good at it. Yeah. I don't share it. But, you know, I have some in my portfolio. And I thought, I'll get some shots. If it's nice, I'll get some shots. If not, I'll just enjoy the moment. Couldn't enjoy the fucking moment.
Yeah.
Just because there were literally, I would say about 100 people all lined up, just getting the same shot. Like, you know, frothing over the gear and the lenses and the tripods.
I was about to say, they all had tripods, didn't they?
God, like, I mean, okay, if that's what you enjoy, that's what you enjoy. But don't come at me saying that's art.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe. It's not one of a kind, that's for sure. It's not unique, original. So you know, there's plenty of that in photography. So I definitely see that attraction with filmmaking. It's just more three-dimensional, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
You've got so many more moving parts yeah. that it's impossible to recreate
yeah,
it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then like you can always take it one step further with in that space where you've got, you know, someone with a camera, and then you could have two cameramen on set, and then you could have someone who's there for audio, and you could have someone there for lighting. Then you've got the talent that's involved, the locations. There's so many different components that it can eventually get to, which is one of the reasons that I've always thought my end goal is working for a production company, and I'm nowhere near close to having that as my dream. But I thought I needed to. I actually thought, why am I dreaming to work underneath someone when I've worked for myself for so long?
Yeah.
So I, little plug.
Do it.
So yeah, I started my my own production company in a way. Started going under as a production team with a couple of other guys, and that's going to be my sole focus, is working as a production unit, having people involved, and being able to get my friends in on jobs as well, because I love working with my friends. Like, that has been one of the best things about being in this industry, is getting to do jobs and like bounce ideas off each other and come up with this end product that I'm so proud of. So yeah, that was the next step for me, and imposter syndrome then sunk in, and I was like, am I ready for this? Like, what? I've not been in this industry for too long. Can I even say, like, are people going to look at me when I say, you know, I'm setting up a production company? Are they going to look at me funny? Are they going to think, well, you're nowhere near ready for that? But I just got to do it, and, you know, fuck the haters.
Fuck the haters. Speaking of hate, let's talk about influencers again.
Yeah. We're always going back to that.
Well, we started there, and then somehow we digressed into filmmaking and photography.
But yeah.
We'll get back there for sure. We just want to kind of wrap up this. The way we are all kind of utilizing social media yeah. and the way it's kind of affecting all of us, whether it's in a professional or personal sense, but definitely in the professional and the artistic sense, how we then create, how we then inspire. Mm-hmm. And I see so many people, and you know, I've had a few on the podcast who've been wonderful guests, but what they do is so, the way they do it and the intent behind it is so different yeah. to maybe me or someone else who doesn't have social media as a priority. Mm-hmm. These people, some of these people out there, the photographers and videographers, content creators, they live every day by their social media presence. Yeah. They will introduce me to people by saying how many followers they've got, yeah. right?
Or their, it's like or their Instagram name. Like their,
what the
yeah.
fuck are we doing
yeah,
here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know that's not real,
yeah,
right? Yeah. You know that's a virtual reality.
Yeah,
there might be real people at the end yeah. of the phones, but they're not, like, get people in a room,
yeah.
get eyes on you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a really interesting way that the landscape is shifting. And I don't see any respite in that. I kind of agree with you in terms of content creation. I don't see that as something that's going to be around forever. Mainly because, I'll get into a question in a minute, mainly because I see more and more people coming on the scene. So mm-hmm. the market, generally content creation is saturated.
It's already,
now it's
yeah.
like oversaturated. Yeah. Which means prices come with that, right? So you end up now getting loads of new people coming into the market and just doing shit for free, right? Yeah. So where do we, you mean, the way I see it, it's going to implode.
Yeah.
And brands are going to get so used to like just getting shit yeah. for free.
Yeah.
And obviously content creators can't live for free.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what happens,
that's
right?
That's it.
There's that brick wall.
It's like an endless cycle. Yeah, it's like, exactly. That's the part of where I didn't think there was any longevity in it, because I feel like you said, everyone is doing more stuff for free, doing collabs because they want to go to a nice hotel, go on a nice holiday. But then, yeah, companies are just going to expect that. And going back to what my partner does, she has managed me for the last 5 years. She also has done some work managing other people as well. And this year in particular has been the hardest part of her career, because she's struggling to get through to anyone that, you know, you need to pay for what the services that we're doing. But they are just like, no, we've changed things around now. You know, content creation is basically something that we're only doing collabs for. And it's actually crazy to see that the people that, you know, I've worked with for the last few years are now completely restructuring their whole, you know, content creation campaigns to only collabs and only free pay, like free projects. So
good or bad?
Terrible. Yeah, absolutely terrible, because it does affect me, because the things I do also are in that kind of industry. Although I don't, again, label myself as a content creator, sometimes I have to do those kind of jobs because the money might be really good. But at the same time, now it's not good, because they're just, you know, there's so many people out there who will also not challenge a company, who will they'll come in and say, no, sorry, we only do collabs. The first reply that, you know, we ever send is, I'm sorry, like, these are our rates, or, you know, the production that we're going to be able to do, it comes at a cost. We can't do it for free. We have to pay the bills. We literally put that in emails, you know, we have to pay our bills. This is how much it's going to cost you. And then they just say, okay, well, you know, we can't do it, because they would only do it for a collab. And it's getting to the point now where it is scary. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I can't see myself being in that social media game for, you know, any longer, and just focusing on creating assets for companies to be able to use for marketing and things like that, instead of, you know, promoting the company through my social media, because I just feel like there has been a rapid decline in the amount of companies that want to pay for good quality stuff. So
I'll also double down on that and say that, and this is a conversation I had with a few of our mutual friends who disagree with me, and I'm okay with that. I think we'll probably agree to disagree forever, but until we see what happens with content creation and social media in general, it's definitely not going away. Let's put it like that. Until the algorithms change to favor, you know, artistic integrity, we're going down one path where we're all becoming more stupid by the day, because we're not getting any kind of integrity with what we see, whether that's whether we're artists following artists or we're normal people following TikTok dances. Short form content, generally speaking, is not truly educational content. You can only communicate so much in 60 seconds or less.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You can't have a conversation with these people to converse, to have discourse, to argue, to disagree, to do this.
Yeah.
So that's out the window.
Yeah.
And you don't have the long form option, which is where I think YouTube is really winning, because you can kind of do everything. It's not predicated so much on the amount of followers or amount of likes that you get. So you do care about that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah.
But
anyone who doesn't,
it's not like, I need to go and make this YouTube video because this is what the algorithm is saying I should make, and this, I need to get another few thousand subscribers by this, you know, and that's my goal. That's my goal, because I'm going to get business from it.
Yeah.
Like, all of that does matter, but it's very different.
Yeah.
I wrangle with not being able to have proper conversations with people. And it's the whole reason I started this podcast. So I saw the way, and podcasting has obviously blew up, surprisingly for me, in the last five years especially. Podcasting is now huge. Almost everyone's a podcaster, right? It's like content creators. Like, oh, what, you're not a podcaster? Oh, God. Yeah, I'm a podcaster, totally. But there's really surprised me, because that's conversation. Mm. And I thought, so maybe I am wrong, but I thought people don't really do that anymore. They'd rather be stuck on their phones for a start. And even when they're on the phones, they're just fucking gorging on this.
Yeah.
And then they're watching something that probably means nothing. Granted, there are some amazing tips and tricks for any industry, but generally speaking, you're watching shit and it's ruining your brain.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you could be reading a book, but all you're doing is scrolling on Instagram, and for many people, 10 hours a day.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the average, and this is probably old data now, but the average in the, I'm still doing this.
It's probably gone up though. So if you're saying,
I mean, it was 6 hours a day on social media, the average across mid 20 year olds. I think they took a sample between 20 and 30 year olds across the US last year.
Crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah, it is crazy.
You know, obviously there are nuances to that, but you know, I spend a lot of time on my phone, but 10 minutes of that is Instagram.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's WhatsApp and a lot of it's email. So, you know, I'm by no means perfect. Yeah. My wife always tells me to get off my phone, especially before bed.
Yeah, yeah.
Same, but I just, I'm so conscious of not getting dragged down with that. And as photographers and as film makes videographers less so because it's a native medium. It's yeah. like, well, you're posting a video. I make videos anyway. Mm-hmm. Photographers, yeah. it's like, well, I've got to get sucked into this. And yeah. it comes back to, no, you don't have to. Yes, it's great if the intended use is business
yeah.
or an audience to sell something to, right? But you don't have to get sucked into that if you don't want to. But photographers, it's difficult because we're still image people.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is no still image app out there really anymore.
Yeah.
So
this is
anyway.
A conversation that I've had with Jord for a long, long time. Like he has felt the
Jord Hammond.
Yes, yeah. He has felt the pressure of reels and short form content for a long, long time. And he just went, you know, I'm not going to fall into that trap. There might be like a clip that he got whilst he was shooting that he's really happy with and he's going to post as a reel. And for his business, he's going to post a lot more educational stuff because his business is, you know, based around education. But he never fell into that trap of like, I need to post because it's the trend now as reels, you know, like reels are becoming a thing. I need more engagement. So I'm just not going to post photos anymore. I'm only going to post reels. I feel like a lot of photographers went into that.
Yeah, me included.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I still do.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't do so much tips. I think I do a tips and tricks maybe once every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is really not enough. The rest of my reels are podcast clips.
But right? then I think that's a bit different because I feel like that's your brand. And you've got so many pieces to your brand that, you know, I don't feel like content creation is the worst thing. If you've got other parts of your business and that's just one of the pieces, short form content, you might be doing educational stuff. It might be small cinematic things, but that's not the entirety of your business. There are other parts to it. You might be a YouTuber, right? But then you need to do short form content to be able to drag people into your longer form things.
Again, it's the intention behind what you're doing it for.
Yeah. I think like sole content creators who are just focusing on one thing, I just, going back to what we said, I just can't see it going anywhere.
Yeah. Find something else.
Yeah. Go
to
away.
To add. Yeah.
Leave Bali. No, I'm joking.
It's now got to a point where, and I'm going to move on in a minute, but it's now got to a point where, take Bali, for example, because we know it really well. People come here to do an intense week of just influencer photo spots.
Yeah.
That, for me, is ruining, and not just the photography industry, but just society.
Yeah.
Like, why are you not coming here to meet the people and learn about a different culture and meet new people and make friends and experience the cuisine and the beaches and the landscapes without getting a fucking selfie or doing the usual pose looking up beneath the waterfall? It's just not helping anyone other than themselves. And you can see that with people like you who are trying to get work in this industry. All of us are, and we go, right, there are our rates. You either get nothing, you get tumbleweed, or you get people coming back, no, it's way too expensive. But I've been charging this, so it's just diluting everything.
It also goes back to what you were saying about what we're actually consuming online, because people are consuming iPhone videos and, you know, travel tips and things like that, whereas I don't feel like they're consuming at the moment longer form content, films. But then that's, if a brand sees that, they're only going to hire people who are doing iPhone videos and, you know, very, very short, easy videos to do. But then that opens the market to everyone with a bloody iPhone who can come here and go to Nung Nung Waterfall and film themselves and film the waterfall and maybe put a product there and then, you know, get the free product or even get paid. You know, it's like, it feels like anyone with an iPhone can do it. And then that goes back to your point of anyone can call themselves a content creator.
Yeah. I wouldn't have a problem with it if people used that. If the majority of creators, content creators, influencers, whatever we want to call them, if the majority of those people used it for good altruistic means, right? Maybe they're helping a charity, but that's not how our human race works. It's people want something for themselves, obviously, and I get that. We've all got to pay our rent. But when it becomes this kind of thing to be cool and to be an influencer and to undercut everyone else that's trying to work so hard to do it well and do it properly and forge long-term relationships with clients and brands, I just don't believe in it.
Yeah. And I think it, you know, I've been in this game for about the last 5 years, and to see a lot of people with, a lot less experience coming into it and getting the kind of work they're getting, it is hard, you know. And I think a lot of people might say, no, I don't care, you know, but they definitely do care. It's very hard to watch people yep. coming into this industry who haven't been doing it as long and having, you know, as much success as they've been having. It definitely does hurt when you've put a lot of time into your craft. You know, I've spent, I can't even count the hours of how much of learning that it took me to nail what I've done. And then to hear like a company wouldn't pay me for all of the time that we've spent, like the time that I've spent learning this stuff over someone who, you know, bought the new iPhone 15 Pro and can make some cool content. It's baffling.
I think we have a responsibility. Like, George's a great example. Now, you mentioned him and his Instagram page, and I talked about this with him in person, but there's two sides to this that I think he's done really well and maybe not so well. There's one side where I think he's done really well, i.e. resist mm-hmm. reels.
Yeah.
But I think he was in an easier position to do so because it already made such a huge base when Instagram was much more conducive to photos. I'm not saying that's why not the sole reason why. He's obviously an amazing artist.
Yeah.
But he was posting, he set his Instagram up when he was, when Instagram was, you know, there were no reels. Yeah. So that helped. I'm not saying that was the causal factor, but when reels came along and I've, you know, spoken about this with him as well, and he's just kind of said, well, no, I'm a photographer. I'm not going to do it. What he's doing there is sending a signal to his students, mm-hmm. to the younger generation, to newbies coming in the space. Like, you don't have to do reels.
Yeah.
It's different for him though, because he's, you know, got a million followers or whatever he has.
Yeah, yeah.
So he doesn't feel like he has to. Maybe mm-hmm. he feels like, oh, I want to kind of make sure I'm still present, still getting engagement, and still having an audience, not losing them.
Yeah.
But I think sending a signal like that is really important. And on the other side, I speak with friends who for me set the wrong example mm-hmm. by focusing on social media as their priority. Photography or whatever, the craft comes second, right? It's like, okay, what am I going to post today? How am I going to engage?
Yeah.
I spend another hour on my Instagram and then do this and then do this and then post this. And then I'm going to go and get that photo and make it look like something I know works. So I'm going to make a video idea that I know works, and then I'm going to replicate it and put it on mine.
Yeah.
And for me, that's just wrong in every way, right?
Yeah.
If you have an influence, if you've got 100,000 followers and more, and mm-hmm. you're doing that, you should, in my opinion, have a responsibility to educate people who, you know, trying to get where you are, right? So I don't know. I think it's obviously there's many complexities, but I do feel we have to set the right example, and you're doing it. Unfortunately, now that you're not posting, then you don't necessarily have that voice. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you speak to your audience?
Yeah.
You have to craft an audience off social media, but to get that audience, you probably have to be active on social media.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a catch-22 position.
I guess like my audience has, you know, always been there. If I still post something now, I will still get the same people always commenting,
cool.
which is
That's
really
great.
Nice to see. But at the same time, I'm not selling any digital products. So I feel like my audience, apart from seeing cool things, they're not, it's not that they're not important to me, but like, I don't need to flood them with content all the time for them to see, because again, like, I can't say because they're not important to me, because I'm so grateful for every single person that's ever followed my work. You know, it means, you know, for every creator, it means a freaking lot when you have these people who will watch you. But, you know, I just don't feel that I'm giving them any value by showing them my stuff all the time, because all I would be doing is repeating the same clips over and over again for them to see in a different format with a trending audio over the top. And I just don't feel like that. All I'm doing is giving them more stuff to watch, to sit there and scroll through all the time. Although it's like my work and I would hope that they would like it, it's not meaningful. There's no story behind it. It might be some old clips that I've put together. And I'm not saying I haven't done this, because I've definitely done it. You know, when reels were booming, what, like 2 years ago when they first really started picking up, I was recycling old videos and finding the trending audio, and I was basically fueling everyone's need to sit there and scroll. Whereas I just don't feel like it's wise or smart to do that with using the same things. If there's something really important that I want someone to watch, or, you know, it's a new piece of work, I'll post it on Instagram. You know, if it's some clips I'm really proud of and I've put them together with some nice audio, I'll post it on Instagram. But I don't feel like I need to then post the same thing the next day in a different order with a new audio over the top of it, because I'm just fueling that endless cycle for people, and it's really bad for their brain. And
and for yours.
Yeah, for me as well. And that's why I decided to take the break, you know. And I wouldn't say it's like a break, because it's probably been about the last year now of really, you know, inconsistent posting. But I'm happy, you know. I just, if you're happy, do it. Yeah. It's
well, that's the counter argument, isn't it? But my, you know, people will say, well, you know, I want to do it and I enjoy doing it. Well, great.
Yeah.
But you might enjoy running dogs over
with
your bike. Yeah. You know, it doesn't mean that it's right.
It's a good thing to do.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe take another thought.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we've kind of solved social media and the world's problems.
Yeah.
What does the next year look like for you? What does 2024 kind of have in store for Harry Pope?
I feel like the next year is really solidifying who I am in this space. Like, I've always, like we were speaking about earlier, I've always felt imposter syndrome. I don't feel like I've been doing it for that long where I can have a name, a big enough name. But at the same time, I'm really confident in what I can do. I'm confident to say that I'm not the best, and I know I can improve so much in so many different aspects, but I'm ready to learn. And the next year is just going to be progressing every stage of my filmmaking, never thinking I'm the best, never thinking that I'm on top, but always knowing that I am good at what I do, and just trying to elevate it every step of the way until next year. Hopefully I can, you know, kind of think about the clients that I really want to work with, and the bigger brands in the world. And needless to say, like, I'm working with some amazing clients at the moment, and, you know, the goals are already getting ticked off in March of this year. So, you know, I'm really grateful for that. But I've got the biggest goals where that people would ask me, and I would say, and they'd think I'm ridiculous. They'd think I'm stupid, and that's unachievable. But, you know, I'm never going to achieve it if I don't think it's going to happen. So this year is really just focusing on the craft, learning, taking in every little bit of, you know, tips and advice from other people, networking, and just making myself the best filmmaker in the fucking world. That's how I'll put it. Yeah.
Nice, mate. Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks,
and obviously I'll be monitoring your progress from just the other side of the street.
Exactly.
But we're going to end with a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. The one is from our previous guests, Luke and Mike.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Don't want it.
Okay.
I'm joking.
It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
But I think it actually is suitable for you, because it kind of brings you into the present moment and to see, you know, what you think about your previous accomplishments. And the question is, what is the greatest accomplishment of your life?
The greatest accomplishment. Is this, if so, of my life, and I'm not specific to photography?
No. Yeah, just anything. Personal.
I'd say the greatest accomplishment of my life was leaving the UK and pursuing something that I was passionate about instead of working the same job that I was doing. I was in the fitness industry in the UK and I was very bored, and I pretty much hated my job. I've only got my current girlfriend to thank for that, because she got me out of that bubble and told me that she was going traveling, and I ended up following her, and the rest is history. So yeah, I think leaving the UK has definitely been my biggest accomplishment, because it's hard, you know. You got, for most people now, if I told my friends, you know, go and move to the other side of the world, go and live a little bit, who are still in the UK, they think I'm crazy and that they'd never be able to do it, you know. And it was hard, and we had no money at the time, and, you know, we were living day by day with the money we were earning from that day. But getting through all of that and getting to the place where I'm in now, which is, you know, happy, doing what I'm doing, earning good money and living a happy, healthy life, I'd say is my biggest accomplishment.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think people who haven't done it don't quite realize how big of a deal moving country is. You're literally like leaving a life behind, going to start a brand new one from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you might have a few $100 in your pocket and your mental health, physical, great. But like it is a big deal. And the older you get, I've done it twice now. I was like, I don't want to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's, and it takes so long to then build your life. Mm-hmm. Like it takes a couple of years to really find. Yeah. So I, you know, I talk to people back in the UK who've never done it and that, you know, like, oh, I must, and they just, I don't know. They can't fathom it. And they have a completely different perspective on life because of it. Right. And that's one beauty. And that's what I love that you said is an accomplishment because it really, really is.
Yeah. This is the third country we've lived in the last 7 years since leaving the UK.
Wow.
So, you know, having to, like you said, like it, you can leave the UK and then you can go, I don't know, and move to another country after that and then move to one more after that. But you're starting from scratch. You know, every country you move to, it's not like you're already one up and it's only a little bit more to move to the next country. You're literally starting from scratch every single time you move.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the accomplishment, just being able to comfortably be on the other side of the world and have set up what we've set up and be happy is it. Yeah.
Nice, mate. Final question, conversation card, lucky dip. So pick card face down, hand it to me.
This is new.
Well, yeah, I guess it is since you last came.
Yeah.
Okay, very good question. All right, this was asked. Actually, no, we haven't had this on the show before, but take as long as you need.
Oh, God.
What pain do you enjoy having?
Pain?
Don't say Jadina.
Yeah, I know. She beats me every night now. The pain I enjoy having is, I would say, and I have to relate this back to my industry and my career. And the pain that I have is knowing what my next steps are and knowing that I'm not there yet, you know?
Yeah.
That's the only way I can describe it. Like if I could jump, I'd never want to say if I could jump 10 years because people would be like, why do you want to skip your life? You know, live your life to the fullest. But if I could jump a year ahead and make sure that I'm in that position that I want to be in, then I would do it. But I know I can't do that. So I need to just stay focused. And even though it pains me that I can't, it pains me that I haven't started what I wanted to do 5 years before. You know, it pains me that coming out of school, I didn't want to go into film or the film industry. I would have gone to film school if I knew this was what I wanted to do coming out of school. And this, all these thoughts always give me, you know, massive anxiety. And that's the pain that I live with. But I'm also happy that I've taken this path because I'm happy that I'm here. You know, I could have stayed in the UK and never met Jed and, you know, be working a 9 to 5. And that's not, you know, that's not for everyone, or it is for some people, but it's definitely not for me. So yeah, I think that's the only way I can answer that. I might not even answer that question properly, but yeah,
I get it.
Yeah,
I
mean,
the desire is the cause of all suffering.
Yeah,
right. Because whether you're whatever end of the scale you're at, whether you are suffering and because you desire food, or you're suffering because you're a billionaire and you desire the next billion, there's always something.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, again, easier said than done. But mate, I picked up a camera when I was 35.
I
struggle with that as well. It is what it is. What am I gonna do? Reverse time?
Exactly. It might annoy you and you might feel that you wished you did have a camera earlier in your career, but it's your story, you know?
Yeah.
I did other things. Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, yeah.
I'm happy, I'm healthy. That's all I care about.
I hope you can try and see that at some point. You know, and it's so easy to, I just, you know, I want to be where I want to be in 5-10 years time.
Yeah.
But, you know, that will go quickly and you'll look back and go, fuck, why didn't I enjoy that?
Yeah.
That time when I had
it. Yeah, exactly.
So with that, let's end.
Easy. Thanks so much, man. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate dealing with more technical issues today.
Always good. That's Bali.
Until next time,
Until next time.
Third time lucky.
Yeah. I'll be here for it.
Thank you.